Hey, welcome back to the roundtable, and here we are. We're all getting together now, and we've had some lovely bumper music, and Joe Donahue's about to sit down, Mike Spain's about to sit down, and boy, the show is about to kick off here at 9:11 on a Friday morning.
You know what that reminded me of, Ray? It was at the beginning of the Macy's Day Thanksgiving parade, when it's sort of Al does the kickoff down at the end of the city, and then they have to have sort of like the play music while well, Matt and Savannah make their way to the Bird's Nest booth. And well, so I don't know whether you're Matt or Savannah.
Well, I'm glad. I'd rather be Al Roker than either one of those. So that's, thank you.
All right. Well, welcome to the roundtable. Oh, our call time is 9:05. I'm sorry, I missed that. Welcome to our roundtable panel. Good to have you with us. Joining us for the discussion this morning, the always wonderful Mike Spain, associate editor of the Times Union, joins us back by popular demand. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, and thanks for inviting me.
Well, thank you for saying yes at the last minute. Also, WAMC's Alan Chartok is with us, I believe.
Yo,
and newsman Ray Graff, of course, who is leading the charge and who was always here and never late.
He can't get up from his chair most of the time.
Aha.
So, yeah, there you go. I did it for you, Alan. Let's move on.
All right. Let's begin with the top story, which I think is an interesting story about control of painkillers. And putting into a new classification of painkillers, and this was something from the FDA yesterday, which ultimately has to do with the drug hydrocodone, which apparently is good for a cold, Ray, so you may want to keep that in mind.
No.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
All right.
Yeah.
And so... you know, this is one of those drugs that I think a lot of us have some familiarity with. It's become quite quite common in many ways. And with this new classification, it seems that they're realizing that this drug can pack quite a wallop. Right, Mike?
Yeah. I mean, it's not uncommon to get some of these drugs when you get a tooth extraction or if you've had surgery and you're home recovering.
Right.
And so they're widely available, and part
and it's
of
the addictive nature that is concerning.
Well, yes, that's one of them. But the other issue is that they make the point that sometimes people use them and then leave them in their medicine cabinet, and then teenagers might experiment with them, or kids might get to them. Or there's even an aftermarket for these medications where people are selling them, and they're just trying to tighten it up. What I thought was interesting was that the Congress was trying to do this, and lobbyists had blocked it. And now it's being done administratively by the FDA. So, you know, it shows you the way that people get around things.
You know, Alan has done shows, Medical Mondays, with pain specialists. And I know I filled in on a Medical Monday several months ago with a pain doctor. And, you know, he says sometimes, and I'm paraphrasing because I'm not going to say his name, and many callers said the same thing, that sometimes these can be, the reins can be too tight, and it makes it tough for doctors to, you know, rightfully prescribe things that their patients need. Yes, you know, restrictions are important. The doctors say that. Everybody says that. But sometimes it can go too far.
From my
understanding. On the other hand, there's something called, you know, may need, and that's the thing that I'm fascinated with. You know, when I had my back operation, I had a prescription for one of the OxyContin things. I wouldn't touch that stuff, you know, because of all of I've read over the years.
Yeah, that's a much more powerful painkiller.
Right. They gave me something a little less. I took a little of that, but it was nothing like, you know, the major stuff. And I know that the Great Barrington Police Department, and I know police departments all over the place, have a no question to ask box that you can throw the stuff in, you know, bring it in and just deposit it so that it's not around your house.
That's right. It is an issue, disposing of all kinds of drugs, antibiotics and these kinds of
well, any medication, even over-the-counter medication.
Right, yeah.
You don't want to put it down the toilet.
Right,
yeah.
which it was, I think, a common means of disposing, and they get into the water system. Police agencies and different groups have collection days, and that's interesting that some police agencies just let you walk in any time. But you know, it's really important to remember, Alan, and you must have the experience of this from your medical Mondays, that, you know, people, if they're in extreme pain after surgery, I mean, they just shouldn't tough it out.
Unless you're Alan.
Yes. Well, I mean, you shouldn't completely tough it out and try to go cold turkey. The stress of that can interfere with your ability to heal, and yet you have to balance it because these drugs are addictive.
One of the things that I found interesting about this particular case is prescription drugs account for about 3/4 of all drug overdose deaths in the United States. So 3/4. With a number of deaths from narcotic painkillers or quadrupling since 1999, drugs containing hydrocodone represent a huge share, about 70% of all the opioid prescriptions, and the looser rules governing them, some experts say, have contributed to their abuse. So of that 75%, when you say 70% have to do with hydrocodone, now hydrocodone, not OxyContin.
What's the difference, though?
Hydrocodone is an over-the-counter, hydrocodone is a prescription, but also has over-the-counter ingredients like acetaminophen or aspirin.
So it's Tylenol mixed with a little of the powerful stuff.
That's right.
Okay.
So that you get the pain relief as well as
inflammation relief and everything else.
And also something that will relieve the pain and probably knock you out a little bit so you can get a good night's sleep.
Okay.
That is the that's
which
the
is essential for healing. Yeah,
that's right. And as Mike mentioned, used injuries, arthritis, dental extractions.
It's common to have a prescription for this, while it can be abused and evidently is, and that's probably behind all these new rules. Many people use them briefly. It helps them get through a period, and then that's fine. So,
yeah.
But now they're just tightening up the rules. I think part of it is you have to go more frequently to your doctor if you're going to continue to use these medications.
The problem, of course, is that it's out on the street. It's being sold as a drug. And there's a lot of it being sold that way. And I think that's a big part of what we're after here.
You know, and you made this point at the very beginning, Alan, and I mean, it's the key to the issue, which is that may need. You know, the doctor will say in cases, you know, you may need this, so you'll have it, which is, and the people who don't take it, which is why you have these 3, 5, 10, 12 pills that are left over that could then ultimately be subject to abuse or not, or just be in your cabinet without you even thinking about it after you're better and doing fine. And which gets to Mike's point, which is tightening the controls a little bit so that you get a certain number of pills that you have to take and then go back to the doctor if you need more.
Well, it's asking for greater oversight, which I think the opponents to this think that if you put anything in the way of somebody who's suffering, who has a chronic condition or a serious medical situation and they need these pain relievers to sort of get by, that when you put obstacles in their way, that's unfair, and some of them will opt not to do it, or they won't be able to do it. They'll suffer, and that's their concern. And I think it's legitimate. I think that the system has to be ready. The doctor has to be ready to take your to help you out on this.
This is a very specific thing, but I just want to point out what we're talking about here is that the DEA is doing, overseeing this from
the FDA and, or the DEA.
Well, the DEA is overseeing the scheduling system, which is that it would change the reclassification of hydrocodone as Schedule II medication. Their current schedule is 3. So it is upping, making it a more powerful drug, according to the DEA, which has then asked the FDA to crack down on that. Make sense?
Mm. Right.
Okay.
Mm.
Right. Excellent.
Now my doctor gave me the prescription and said, go fill it. On paper. But apparently there were some docs who are calling it in and they're going to stop that. And, you know, in other words, you're going to have to present a prescription
to
the druggist.
You know, and I think that is that has to do with the scheduling. If you have a drug where that they can be called on, the difference between a hydrocodone or an OxyContin.
Yeah.
An OxyContin has to be on a state prescription pad. It cannot be called in. It's a, what they call a duplicate prescription, and is given to you. It has to be, you have to sign for it. You have to present it to the pharmacist. And it is much different than just, phoning it in, which will then, I guess, reclassify this medication to that level.
Well, one question I had when I read this was that obviously many people come home from surgery or injuries or accidents, and somebody else needs to make the trip to the pharmacist. I think that's still allowed.
That's a good point. Yes, it is. Yes.
It is allowed. But my question is about the sales. Just so we're clear on this, and maybe I'll play stump the band with you. It is illegal for anybody to buy. To buy a drug that was not prescribed for them from someone else, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that gets a lot of people in trouble. Rush Limbaugh comes to mind.
Yes.
Negatitos.
Cabbage.
Oh.
Okay. Are we still playing Stump the Band? Or are we done with
No. No, the band won.
Okay. Oh, good.
Well, I mean, and then in a more general way, pharmacists and physicians and health officials certainly advise against, giving somebody in your household a prescription drug that was prescribed for you when they have a similar symptom that's really dangerous and risky. And I think that's probably one of the reasons that this leads to overdoses.
Well, I'm too paranoid, but I have to say that in my very little little naive bubble that I live in, I don't know how many times I've said, I fell on the ice and I hurt my back, and somebody says, "Oh, I have this leftover from my juicer. Right, would you like to have this?" Like, no, I don't want to have that. I don't want to put anything in my system. Thank you.
Do you guys remember the Woody Allen film? I don't remember which one it was, in which somebody has fainted from anxiety. And does anybody have one of those pills? And everybody,
yeah,
is that one?
Yeah, here you go. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation. We're going to talk about campaign donation ruling in New York from the courts and much more. We welcome you in our program, Roundtable, WAMC.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Mr. Reuter Plumbing. Septic system installations, inspections, pumping, location services, trenchless pipelining and replacement, sewer odors and more. TheHudsonValley.MrReuter.com. Albany Institute of History and Art. GE presents the Mystery of the Albany Mummies exhibition, now open. Nicholas Reeves lectures on Amenhotep's mask and his Book of the Dead. Sunday, October 27th at 2 p.m., albanyinstitute.org. And Whitney's Farm Market and Country Gardens, Cheshire. Hosting Pumpkin Fest every weekend through October. You pick pumpkins, corn maze, hay rides, petting zoo, and more. Whitney'sFarm.com.
Close your eyes. Let them...
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan, we want to start with you on this. It's an interesting story. Sure. A federal appeals court on Thursday ruled that a conservative group supporting Joseph Loda, the Republican nominee for mayor of New York City, can immediately begin accepting contributions of any size because New York State's limit on donations to independent political committees is probably unconstitutional. My question is about the word probably.
Yeah. No, the handwriting is on the wall ever since Citizens United. It's a Republican court. No two ways about it. It's a 5-4 court and sort of little legislature. We know that Republicans are often portrayed, and I think with some justification, as an aggregate, not as individuals, but as an aggregate of having more money. Therefore, you give the advantage to them, as you did in Nixon, the same court did in Nixon versus, what do I say? Nixon, Bush versus Gore.
wrong Republican.
There's some substitution going in there, you know.
all the same. So Bush versus... Bush versus Gore, and like that, the handwriting is on the wall. As I said, it is going to be, you know, anything you can do. Now that means that the other side in each of these cases has to figure out ways to do it. Sometimes it may be you tap your cell phone and you make a $30 contribution and you get millions of people to do it that may make up the difference. But it's done. And it's, in my mind, awful. It gives a tremendous advantage to those people who have unlimited amounts of money in this country. And we know there are a lot of them. And if you can't hear it in my voice, I don't like it.
Right. And so Soros is not allowed to do it, too, in your world then, right?
No, that's it's a sort of a sort of sharp question from you, Raymond. And we know very well that Soros has a lot of money and does it. But it's what's wrong for the goose is wrong for the gander.
Okay.
And obviously, it would be silly to say that. But if you take as a group, everybody, I don't think there's any question as to who gives more on those donations and who will.
One thing's for sure, it looks like, 11, 12 days before the election, this is not going to do Lota much good.
But it will play into next year's gubernatorial campaign.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
In which
yes. Yeah. Andrew, who is going to win big, certainly will be disadvantaged by this. He's got $29 million, more now, $29 million in his campaign account, Mike. And you know why people give money? I'm gonna tell you something. You guys may not know this. But the reason people give money in a campaign is they want something. And if they think the guy's going to win, they give him money. They don't care if he's a Democrat, if he's a Republican. If they think it's close and they can influence things, that's different.
Well, Alan, I have a question for you. Will this have any impact on the outcome of the Moreland Act Commission, which may recommend legislation that would limit campaign financing? Now it looks like the laws that New York might make to control campaign financing could be thrown out by a federal court.
Hmm.
Well, no, that's a brilliant observation. It really is, Mike. One thing is to limit how much you can give. Another thing is to say to people who are running for political office, we will match a certain amount of money for you. There's a difference between saying, no, you can't spend more than this. But some of those campaign laws, you're exactly right, have as a caveat that if you want the money, then what you have to do is limit your amount. And that's where you're probably right on this.
We are about to hit a news break. I want to invite you to join our conversation, roundtablewamc.org, roundtablewamc.org. When we come back, we'll talk about the American Health Care Act, Affordable Health Care Act, excuse me, as well as Edward Snowden, and we'll get some of the latest headlines from the Times Union as well. We welcome your input, roundtablewamc.org, after this short break.
Honey, I've been thinking about you. All that you do.
Isn't that incredible? Yeah.
It's amazing.
Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel this morning. We're just talking later on in the show. We're going to have a gentleman on who is a strongman.
Yeah.
And he was a Coney Island strongman. You remember the strongmen in Coney Island, right, Alan?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I remember that. And I remember the Nathan's Frankfurters particularly well.
Yeah, you never had one of those, though, did you? Or were you?
Indeed, I did.
Okay, all right. So this guy will take these metal spikes, and realizing this is radio, what we've done is we've put up the video of the guy bending this thing right in front of us in the studio.
Yep.
It's insane.
Hey, Ray can do that.
I'm not sure I could
actually
do this.
He actually just tried to do this.
No, I didn't. I mean, if I tried, I could do it, obviously.
All right. Well, during the next break, you can try it.
Yeah,
catch it. It's on the roundtable page, and just check out the video. It's pretty incredible. There's two of them there. There's one he rips a pack of cards in half.
Right.
And that's hard.
That's what they mean by cutting the cards.
That's right. Yeah, you know, right in half. Yeah. Cute. See what you did there? Yeah, yeah. And then the metal spike thing. It's
terrific.
It's pretty amazing.
So that's a whole 10-minute segment then?
Yeah.
Enjoy.
He's the subject of a documentary called Bending Steel, which is at the Film Columbia, which our good friend Peter Biskin has programmed. And so we're looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Excellent.
You know who else could do that?
Who?
Superman.
Right.
That's a good point.
That's true.
Yes. And steel in his bare hands.
Sure. Yep.
Absolutely.
He could, yeah.
Your favorite superhero? We should ask this question actually sometime. Your favorite superhero would be Superman?
Superman.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
All right. Let's move on to other stories and talk about the.
Mr. Knapp is mine. Resting man.
Let's talk about healthcare.gov. So they have a hearing yesterday, and the contractors go before the committee, and they say, well, those of us who are in charge of building the federal online health insurance marketplace say that the whole thing went ahead of plan. Went with the launch of October 1st, went ahead without sufficient testing.
Well, duh.
Right. They say that they kept on saying that it's not ready, it's not ready, it's not ready. They also believe that the tests were, I think I have this right, the test only began 2 weeks prior to the rollout.
The end-to-end testing, you know, the trials and everything.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they say for it to have really been effective, again, this is where you make your sound, Ray.
Well, duh.
Yeah. Then you would have had to do it a lot sooner than just 2 weeks before the rollout, the October 1st rollout. That was the testimony yesterday.
Can I make a suggestion?
In the first public remarks, yes.
All right. We know this.
This House Energy and Commerce Committee.
We know this. Enough with the whys. Fix it and move on. We know they rolled it out too quickly. Enough. Enough.
Well, to me, what's interesting is it kind of illustrates what a lot of people suspected, that there was this enormous political pressure going on. Look at what was going on that last couple of weeks of September. You know, the Republicans in Congress were threatening to shut down the government, which they did on October 1st. And, you know, the launch of the healthcare websites was constantly in the news. And there was so much pressure that to come out. And one of the things that the Republicans were trying to do with the shutdown, by threatening the shutdown, was to delay and somehow interfere with Obamacare going live. So they were under this enormous pressure to bring it live, and yet the people who they were charging with building the website were saying, oh, no, we're not ready, and they still did it. I mean, it's a risk.
Like Mike's little voice there.
Yeah. Well, oh, no. Well, they
didn't say it loud enough.
They say they did it. It occurs to me that if I was this company, and I was blaming the administration right now, I don't think I'd apply for another
gig.
This could interfere with their ability to land another government contract.
Right.
Well, and you know, how protective are you? Obviously, they want to cover themselves, but they they say, well, it wasn't our idea to go live. The question then the government's coming back with is, okay, but why wasn't the testing done beforehand when it should have been done? And isn't that in your court? Which I think is a valid point to make. But I go back. I think all of this is overridden by Ray's excellent point of, you know, how much name calling and finger pointing can you do when let's just get it over
fixed.
With and fixed.
Well, and Mike's excellent point, which is that do the American people think that these guys are being the Republicans are being disingenuous in this?
They're so concerned about their ability. They're so concerned.
They know they wanted to kill him. We know they wanted to kill it. And now they say, oh, well, yeah, we did want to kill it, but they don't even acknowledge that. But isn't it terrible the way they did it? It's really stinks of hypocrisy.
And I think we made this point yesterday, but when it comes down to it, right, that not a whole lot is going to be, we're not going to see much come out of this.
No.
Like anything, it'll just sort of go up in the ether, right?
Yeah, and you know, maybe the next time they launch a major website, they'll do a little more testing.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, but
I would think so.
I mean, in the end, there may be some delays granted or some stays granted for people who signed up late before they actually have to, you know, buy their health care plan or something like that. There might be something that'll come out of it that'll actually be practical. But in the short term, it's a political problem. In the long term, I don't think it's that big a deal.
And, yeah, you know, NASA thinks a couple of times before they send one of those things up. You know, they delay them all the time.
Spaceships.
Say, well, you know, there's a little extra oxygen. There's a little extra this or that. Yeah, and they delay them.
And also, this is to Mike's point, and I haven't fully thought this out, but wouldn't the excellent excuse have been when you're going to roll it out on October 1st, you have a shutdown on October 1st, isn't that a good excuse to
delay?
Let's delay?
Well, it would have been, I think that when you calculate that back in the end of September, I think it would have appeared, and appearances are everything in politics.
That they're backing down?
It would have appeared that, aha, they're not even ready.
I see.
And that gives us, it would embolden the opponents to say, we've already slowed the launch of it. Now let's just pounce and keep it.
No. I think you're right, except that I think that the opponents would have said, we win. You see, we told them to hold off, and now they're holding off. And that's one for
keep
our
side.
Keep
up the pressure, right. Keep
I think
up
you're
pressure.
Both right.
Yeah. And so it's politics.
Well, right? I think I'm right.
Well, you're more right, but I think you're both right.
Yeah, Alan's more right. Sorry, Mike.
I have nothing else to say.
I remember I was I remember sitting next to somebody who was I won't say who it was, but it was a very well-known liberal leader in this community. No, a leader in the political community. And I was at a function where he was squeezing into the table. There was room for eight people, but he showed up late, and somebody said, just join us. And we all were kind of making space at the table, and and I said, would you like to just move a little right? And he said, never.
Interesting.
Well done.
Let's talk about an interesting story that you have regarding the lieutenant governor.
That's right. James Odato keeps an eye on everything, and he reports today about Lieutenant Governor Robert Duffy, who interviewed for a job back on October 5th out in Rochester. It's a Rochester Regional Development Authority. It's called the Business Alliance. And they're looking for a new executive director. And he was brought in as a top candidate for that job. He was interviewed and later disclosed that to the governor. And has since actually withdrawn from seeking the position because the woman who currently holds it decided that she's going to keep it through another year, and the whole thing is kind of on hold.
Is there a secret? Is there an elephant on the table here?
Right. Well,
named Andrew on the table saying you what? You were going to be,
you're going to leave
governor,
me.
That just makes,
you can't leave me. I need to fire you.
Well, haven't there been questions for a while as to whether he would remain on the ticket
for the second term? That's
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's different. That's different because that would be Andrew's decision.
Right, but then the guy starts looking for a new job. If he feels he's not going to be on the ticket, and there's some question, and
he already knows he's not going to be on the ticket.
Right.
I mean, that's what this says to me. He already knows he won't be on the ticket, and he's, you know, getting a gig.
The person who holds
What's the rule here? What is the rule?
Well,
don't fool with Andrew.
Right. Well, you know, but here he is, you know, the lieutenant, it's not like he's not engaged. It's not like he doesn't support the governor and represent the governor. It's not like, you may recall, Alan, when because of a primary where the lieutenant governor candidate was picked and the gubernatorial candidate was picked back in the early 80s when Mario Cuomo ended up with Alfred Del Bello as the lieutenant governor on the ticket. And they didn't get along, and Del Bello was pretty much shut out. And this is not the case with Duffy. Duffy is there. He's out selling the constitutional
Duffy carries
amendment.
The mail.
So here's my question. So if you don't want him to be part of the ticket, and then he goes for another job. So where you're saying, okay, you can't have this job as lieutenant governor, and we're going to make it so you can't have this job as part of this this business group.
But isn't it an appearance of impropriety?
I mean, right. Well, that's my question. I mean, that mean it's like basically okay. Not only we don't want you to be perhaps. I'm just going with Alan's scenario of you know is that what we're saying that the governor is saying okay, well you'll never work in this town again.
Oh well
it's all conjecture. Well, this is all conjecture.
But that would be a political ramification. There's also some potential legal ramifications in James Odato's story. He mentions that this organization that Duffy interviewed to become the head of is a registered lobby. And, you know, whether there's any ethical considerations. Yet, Duffy, you know, others are saying that that's not the case. He's independent. He's not a lawmaker. He's not subject to some of the rules that if you were a legislator that would, you know, hand out money, you know, your committee might vote to hand out grants or things like that, that this doesn't apply. But, you know, it depends on the interpretation. But it's apparently all moot right now because the woman who heads this organization in Rochester is going to stay in the job through the end of 2014, it looks like.
Whether she likes it or not. You can join in on the conversation, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will wrap up for today. We've got a couple letters that we'll read, and then we will get to other topics. We'll do all of that after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Catskill Mountain Foundation, Hunter, New York, presenting the Catskill Jazz Factory, saxophonist Lou Tabakin, and the Aaron Deal Trio, October 26th, Doctoral Center for the Arts, Hunter, CatskillMTN.org. Melanie Shi, OMD, Kingston, sixth generation practitioner of acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine, insurance accepted, the Chinese Healing Arts Center, 845-338-6045. And Mother Earth's Storehouse, Kingston, Poughkeepsie, and Saugerties, natural food grocer and vitamin center, serving the Hudson Valley with organic and natural foods since 1978. MotherEarthStorehouse.com for recipes and store events.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel on WAMC and the roundtable this morning. Our panel made up of Ray Graff, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, and myself, and we welcome your thoughts as well. WAMC, it's roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Luca makes the point about we were talking about the rollout of the healthcare and we made a connection to NASA. Said NASA, each accident had political pressure pushing the agenda.
That's a great point made.
And I thought there was another letter, but I guess there wasn't. So we move on to other issues. And Alan, one of the issues you wanted to talk about was mandatory retirement for judges.
Well, very quickly, there does seem to be some people like the ill-advised Dick Dady, I guess Citizens Union, I'm not sure, who say it's really not quite right. We don't, you know, judges, mandatory judges, retirement for judges at the very top of court we have, the Court of Appeals in New York State, have to go at 70. And some of them are at the top of their time. There's a constitutional amendment to make it 80. As a 72-year-old, I want to strenuously object to this kind of thinking that you have to stop when you're 70, that life is all over. And I appeal to my fellow WAMC listeners, who sometimes can be a little bit older than others, and to check in on this. And I don't understand who Dady is shilling for, to be perfectly honest with you on this one.
So this is a proposal on the November ballot, right, to allow some judges to serve until they're 80 years old and is not drawing a lot of support. And there are court experts who are saying that they say that's a shame and they don't really understand it.
And what, six proposals on the ballot, from six. What I understand? Mm-hmm. Six proposals six. On the November ballot. And this last one asked whether some judges in the state should be allowed to keep their jobs until the age of 80. And as Alan mentioned, the current mandatory retirement age for the state Supreme Court judges and judges on the state's highest court, the Court of Appeals, is age 70.
Yeah, so, but the Supreme Court, they're allowed to have two more sort of
three more, I believe.
They can come back for
two-year terms, which would bring you up to 76.
Right, and every 2 years they get recertified.
The Court of Appeals, off. I mean, off. And we've lost some wonderful judges from the Court of Appeals who were top draw because of this silly law. I mean, you know, in the old days when people died at 60, okay. But now people live for a long time. They're bright. And it really is. It really stinks of ageism, to be perfectly honest.
But, I mean, isn't 76 a pretty long career for a judge?
Well, what this would let them do is finish their terms in most cases. A lot of them have to leave. You know,
win a term. It's a 14-year term, and they can't fill it out because they have to be off at 70. And I don't understand why. I mean, you can be 83 and run for president of the United States
or be
a senator, and yet you can't run on a judge.
And often these judges who have left the Court of Appeals have gone on to have a very big legal careers after that. They go to law firms in New York and they're prized because, you know, after a career of experience, they really know the law and they're valuable, and we're getting rid of them when they may be the most valuable to the public.
And I agree with Alan.
So one wonders why. One wonders what the real reasons are people don't want it. Is it that some people want to, a governor, for example, might want to fill those spots and get a little gratefulness from other people? Although I once asked Mario Cuomo, I said, you know, governor, you get everybody to like you because you can appoint all these people. He says, yeah. He says you get 200 ingrates.
Yeah.
And 200 angry people and one ingrate. I love that.
Right. Well, he was noted for his Court of Appeals selections, Mario Cuomo. He was really even-handed and balanced and praised for that during when he was governor. But, you know, one other interesting aspect of this was that this rule this law that you have to retire at age 70 for Court of Appeals judges dates back like to the 1860s. So it was really a different time and era then.
And you think of just the experience that these judges have. I mean, certainly, if I don't care what side you're on of a particular case, but if a case is going to a court of that level, I want the most experienced people. It's like, you know, you want your pilot to have gray hair. You know, you want that experience when you go in to know that the person.
Right. Sully was an experienced pilot, and that's why he landed that plane in the Hudson River successfully.
You know,
you think you want that
experience. Mm-hmm. So, for whatever it's worth, let's end on a very light note. Let's talk about core standards.
Core standards. nothing like a light note. Of course.
Area shaken by the core.
You're referring to the hearings that have been going on across the state have resumed, where the State Education Commissioner John King is letting members of the public tell him what they think about the state's adoption of a core curriculum, a common core curriculum of standards, which includes some testing that New York State students have not done that well in. Parents are upset, teachers are upset, and he's out defending it. Of course, his hearings were suspended after a raucous hearing down in Poughkeepsie a couple of weeks ago. They've retooled it. Now they have moderators. It's not quite, it's a lot more civil. Everybody has agreed to be polite to each other. And yesterday there was one in the city of Albany at the Myers Middle School. 67 parents and teachers got up and pretty much complained, but they were civil. I mean, there were a little bit of tears and some emotion, but he listened, he talked, and others talked, and it was kind of a civil evening. He
only said, 67?
Yeah, only 67 spoke, more attended. You know, they had room for a lot. And in this, out of this, Commissioner King says that the state is committed to stay the course and continue to have this curriculum. However, he is open to some modifications. The problem is it came so very quickly. It hasn't given teachers, schools, students, parents the ability to adjust, and it's really been difficult, and that's what he heard yesterday from parents.
Have you guys ever had that dream where you have to take a test and you realize you never took the course?
All the time.
I think that is what's going on here. I mean, yeah. I think the major complaint is if you're going to test us, tell us what to teach first. Make sure we know what we're doing. This is outrageous. Look, it's just one more hit on our teachers who deserve better.
Why do you think we're getting the hit, though? I mean, what's the motive behind it?
Well, I think in some cases is this stuff is tied to teacher performance, Joe. There's always there are always those who'd like to get rid of some of them, and sometimes to put their cousin Louie in the job. But that's not always the reason.
Always comes down to cousin Louie.
Yeah, well, cousin Louie. A lot of people run for school board and have a cousin Louie. You know what I mean?
I think I do.
Well, there are segments in communities that believe teachers, have it too easy, and they get tenure, and they're paid too much, and we have to do more.
That's
that's a common thread that
But it's wrong. I mean, I was married to a teacher. She became a college teacher. She came home with tons of papers every day. She was up burning the midnight oil, reading them. My prospective son-in-law was here this weekend. He had a pile of papers. He didn't get up until all of those papers were done on the weekend, not 9 to 3 in the day. It's crazy. Teachers are wonderful. They work hard. They're our most valuable citizens. And to have any kind of punitive sort of reaction like that, a know-nothing reaction, is just silly.
Well, do you think that the Common Core...
Have I said something?
Well, no. Do you think the Common Core curriculum that the state is trying to adopt was aimed at teachers, or is it just affecting teachers, parents, and students, and it's affecting everybody?
It's affecting everybody. Look, we know that in some places the schools aren't good. We know that in many places, in fact, I would say most places, they are good. So if you tell a parent, oh, by the way, your kid just failed a test when your kid's been getting A's all along, that parent is going to be furious because there's college involved, careers involved, and everything else. I don't mind if you want the money, which is what this is all about. They wanted the rush to the top money. But if you want the money, fine, but do it right.
We're going to end there for this morning, and thank you all for checking in during the segment and all week long. Mike Spain, thank you very much, as always, for being with us. We'll see you on Tuesday.
Happy to be here.
Thank you very much. We'll have Rosemary and Libby on Monday joining us. Raymond, have a great weekend.
Thanks, Joe. I appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Thank you very much, and Alan, take care as well. Alan?
Okay.
I was saying goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Have a lovely weekend, Alan.
Okay, you too, Joe.
Thank you very much. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.